This is Health Matters with Cipla.
Something that most of us would have experienced at some point of our lives is constipation. But for some people, it's actually a chronic condition that can affect their daily lives. It's not something that's easy to live with or even talk about, but there are ways to manage and treat it. So obviously, we're here today to discuss on Health Matters this week, constipation amongst other things. For this, I'm joined by Professor Mashiko Setshedi, who's Head of Medical Gastroenterology at Groote Hospital. Prof, thanks so much for joining us.
You're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
Now, constipation. Let's start at that word constipation. How do we accurately define constipation?
How long do you have? It's such a difficult thing to define,
yes.
Even medically speaking.
Yeah.
And if you ask 50 people what do they mean when they say they're constipated, you'll get 50 different explanations of what they think is. So you'll hear that they have abdominal pain or discomfort. They have reduced frequency. So they're not going out as often as they think
yes.
is the right amount.
Yes.
So some people think they should go once a day. For other people, it's quite normal to go 2 or 3 times a day.
Yeah.
So then they'll say they're constipated if it's less than what they expect.
Sure.
Other people have difficulty passing stool,
yeah.
you know, so they feel like it's difficult to get the stuff out.
Yes.
Others, they've had a motion and then they still have a sense of incomplete evacuation. So that
right.
there's still something there and
then
that they
yes.
need to go back.
Yes.
Others have blood and they think that's, I'm constipated, hence I have blood.
Yes.
You know, so it's a whole lot of expectations of what they think constipation is. And if you ask medical doctors, they too have different ideas about what they think constipation is.
Yeah.
The truth is that it's all of those things.
Sure.
Or some of all those things.
Yes.
And in an attempt to try and sort of standardize a definition, particularly for research and for clinical trials and stuff, we've come up with a definition that encompasses most of that. And if you have two of those symptoms, then you have constipation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, there's obviously a difference between chronic constipation
yeah.
and occasional. And we've all been through those patches as human beings where we go, well, it's been a while now, 1 day, 2 day, 3 day, and we'll go through that.
Yeah.
And it'll happen maybe a couple of times in our lives. But then there's those that have chronic constipation. There's a difference between obviously those two.
Definitely, Ryan. I mean, I think that's such an important question because there is a difference between occasional constipation,
yes.
which all of us have experienced.
Yeah.
And then chronic constipation.
Yes.
And the good thing about occasional constipation is that most people will have an identifiable trigger. You
yeah.
know, they didn't drink enough fluids or they ate a particular food or they were traveling or they were stressed or they're on a particular medication. So they can say, right, I understand why I'm currently occasionally constipated. The problem is when you're chronically constipated. Now, that could be you having symptoms over and over again or over years or it's quite severe. Or actually, it's just an ongoing problem.
Yes.
You know, this is a problem that you have with your stool. And so medically speaking, the definition of chronic constipation is if you have the constellation of those symptoms.
Right.
In any 3 month period over a 6 month period.
Wow.
So if, say, between January and June, in 3 months of that time, I had struggles with passing stool or with infrequent defecation or with difficulty passing stool
yes.
or passing hard, lumpy stools
okay.
or any of those symptoms, then medically speaking, that is what we call chronic constipation.
And that's when you should see a doctor or when should you go and seek medical advice?
So you might institute lifestyle measures first.
Got you.
Before you go and see a doctor. I
yes.
mean, I can explain to you later when you should definitely go and see a doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's amazing. Everyone's got their own remedies. I haven't been in a while. You need to eat more fiber.
Yeah.
Drink more coffee. You'll go more. You'll
yeah.
be more regular. You know, everyone's got their own magic treatment to how to cure the constipation we're going through right now. And everyone's got their secret remedies of what they need to do to keep them regular. And I mean, you know, everyone's an expert.
Listen, people understand their bodies
yeah.
and they understand themselves well.
Yes.
And they understand their schedules.
Yes.
You know, their bowel
yeah, yeah,
habit
yeah.
schedules.
Absolutely.
And I say, you know, do what works for you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
if you know that eating a banana constipates you, then clearly
stop eating bananas.
Yeah, reduce. And if coffee makes you go a little bit quicker or whatever, then go for it. So
yeah,
I think that's
yeah.
fine, those
yeah.
remedies.
Yeah.
You know.
Now,
and different things work for different people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Prof, you mentioned lifestyle. I mean, I was going to ask what causes kind of chronic constipation or any kind of constipation, but I guess it's a whole lot of factors that one has to look at. And you touched on lifestyle, et cetera, but it can be a changing. It can be a number of things. And I guess that's the kind of a route that you want to try and discover when somebody's going through any kind of constipation is what is the underlying factors, triggers that are causing said constipation?
So when we see a patient who's referred to us or who comes to us because of constipation, what we want to find out is this a primary problem?
Yeah.
And by primary, I mean there's no assigned cause. There's no obvious cause. So you've done investigations, you've examined the patient, but you don't find any specific cause other than that, that the transit is quite slow.
Right.
That that person has a what we call a lazy gut.
Okay.
And then there's secondary causes. Now, the secondary causes are important because those are potentially treatable, right?
Okay.
So if you've got hormonal problems, endocrine problems, so under-functioning thyroid.
Yes.
If you're pregnant, your gut slows down.
Right.
Right. If you've got an obstruction in the bottom, your gut will slow down.
Got you.
If you've got inflammation or a stricture is a narrowing of the colon.
All right.
You know, so in that situation, then you identify the cause and you can treat it. Then, technically speaking, the constipation should resolve.
Got
so
you.
That's secondary causes of constipation.
Got you.
The primary causes are when there isn't any obvious organic identifiable cause.
Right.
And the poster child of this would be irritable bowel syndrome.
Okay.
Some people might understand it as spastic colon.
Yeah.
So there, you basically have an abnormality in the way that your brain communicates with your gut. So there's disordered contraction, disordered messages sent from your brain to your gut, and so you don't pass through. You get a slowing down and so forth. Those patients have constipation, but they also have pain. So that is the thing that distinguishes IBS from other causes of idiopathic constipation. And then there are genetic issues, you know, Hirschsprung's disease and other things where people are born with the problem of nerves that supply the gut.
Yeah.
So they will have constipation.
Yeah.
So the primary causes are when there isn't an organic problem, but still the patient complains of a slow transit, just not passing enough stool. The other problem that's important to mention is people who struggle passing stool. So they struggle to sense that their rectum is full and it's time to go to the toilet.
Yeah.
That's an important thing as well.
Wow.
And that is when you really must go see the doctor because you might have an anorectal problem.
Got you.
Dyssynergy.
Yes.
And that is potentially treatable. You don't have to suffer with that. You
got
can
you.
Definitely go see someone for that sort of thing.
Now, you mentioned treatments. I kind of think about going in, and I remember this because this has happened to me, to buy OTC medicine, going in, buying something over the counter, and I see this thing, and they promise me I'm going to go, and boy, they were right. Prof, they were spot on. Not only did I go, I went and I was like, when's it all going to stop?
So you got value for your money.
I got bang for my buck. I wasn't constipated, definitely. But the point being is that we go and we use these medicines, and when I always think, my system, I flushed my system out. I've almost like pressed the reset button, because mentally this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking I've got rid of the problem or the issue that I had. Meanwhile, you know, in 2 weeks' time again, you're I find myself going
back to the same.
I'm going again. I'm going to buy the same medication, and I'm not actually dealing with the underlying issue. And you must see quite a bit of or hear stories like that a lot.
So I think the important thing is sort of understand your own schedule.
Yes.
People are different.
Yeah.
So for some people, going once a week is perfectly normal.
Yes.
As long as you don't have other symptoms that suggest that there might be something else going on to explain this problem.
Yes.
And I think in that sense, then you can institute lifestyle measures. You can accept that you're not a regular person who's going to go every single day. So I think there's a lot of attitudes and cultural issues about what is normal and what is not normal. Because I can tell you now, a lot of the patients that get referred to us, we do top to bottom investigations and we don't find anything.
Sure.
So really what they have is what we call slow transit.
Got you.
And in that sense, then you can institute lifestyle measures to try and improve things.
Yes.
You can kind of also accept that this is your own, you know, constitution. And
yes.
I think that's fine.
That's fine.
As long as there aren't problems and
Got
other
you.
Things going on. And people worry about overuse of laxatives, for instance.
Yeah.
And that is true for this, what we call the stimulant laxatives.
Okay.
That really, those you should use short term.
Sure.
Not repeatedly.
Noted.
But if you need something longer term, so for instance, if you're a cancer patient
sure.
and you're on opiates or whatever, which will cause constipation, then you need something. And then osmotic laxatives are quite good.
Okay.
Yeah.
That hand in hand with therapies. I mean, there's got to be therapies out there as well that we can touch on and discuss that will help.
Sure. So the simple lifestyle measures, you've touched on them, is drink lots of fluids.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knows 1 to 2 liters. It's good not just for constipation, but for everything else, right? Increase your dietary fiber intake.
Gotcha.
And we're talking 25 to 30 grams of fiber. Now, that's a lot of fiber.
Yeah.
You have to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables and oats and wheat and whatever. If you can't manage the fiber, because some people, when they eat fiber, it actually causes bloating and gas.
Okay.
So it actually makes them feel a little bit worse.
Yeah.
The important thing is that if you increase your fiber, you must increase your fluid intake.
Yes.
Then, if you can't manage the fiber that's required daily, then you can buy a fiber supplement so that you do get the kind of fiber that you need.
Okay.
Prunes have been medically proven in research to work.
They work.
They work. So they we're talking 7 prunes twice a day.
Wow.
That should keep you regular.
If that doesn't, go see a doctor.
The problem is that they can be expensive for some people, right?
Yes.
You've talked about coffee.
Yes.
So coffee is a natural laxative.
Sure.
And then patients will tell you their own remedies. They wake up and they drink hot water with lemon slices.
Yes.
First thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Before you eat anything.
Yeah.
That works, right? And then exercise.
Yes.
You've got to increase your exercise because it does improve colonic transit.
Amazing.
Right. So that is important to do. So those are the lifestyle measures.
Okay.
Other things are toilet habits, right?
Yeah.
Ideally, you want to have a motion first thing in the morning.
Yes.
If not first thing in the morning, that's the best time, then after breakfast.
Yes.
Because food stimulates peristalsis.
Yes.
So colonic movement.
Got you.
So, and if that's not working for you, then you can try things like having a little stool on the floor.
Yeah.
And then you put your feet up on the stool, right?
Right.
So that elevates your thighs above the level of the toilet seat.
Wow.
Now that is the most natural position, actually.
I'm going to lie. That sounds very comfortable. While I'm having a stool, my feet are on a stool.
I haven't tried it myself, but apparently that's the most natural position to actually have a motion, because what it does is that it reduces the angle between your rectum and the anus.
It straightens it out.
And then it makes it a little bit easier for you to have a motion.
That is
so
incredible.
So have a little stool, or if you can, if you're quite flexible, you can sort of lift up your feet.
I was about to say, my wife will have a heart attack if I have a little stool on the floor.
I think she comes in and finds you with your feet up. She might wonder what the hell you're doing. But those are the things that you can do, you know, to sort of help, you know, to stay regular and whatever.
Yeah.
Now, if that stuff doesn't work, then you do have to then resort to medication.
Got
and
you.
There's simple medications that you can use.
Yes.
So laxatives, they're available, they're over-the-counter.
Yeah.
You can try that. Osmotic laxatives.
Yes, what's the difference? Yeah. Osmotic and stimulant laxatives. What's
Very
the difference
good
between
question.
The two?
So osmotic laxatives are basically sugars, right, that actually draw fluid into the bowel.
Okay.
They're non-absorbable sugars. They draw fluid into the bowel, and when they've drawn fluid into the bowel, it makes your liquid more, your stool more liquidy, and so it's much easier to pass the stool.
Yes.
Whereas the stimulant ones, they actually activate the muscle of the colon and stimulate peristalsis or movement.
Got you.
Yeah.
That's
so that's the basic difference. So basically you want sugars, and that's why alcohol, alcohol is a sugar. That is why it can
this
cause...
This explains why after, I think those that drink alcohol will know.
Yeah.
The day after a said amount of alcohol, the stomach tends to be very active the next morning.
Very compliant.
Very compliant. Now, Prof, talking about stimulants and kind of a products that support, you know, the fight against constipation, I've seen a really good advert, in actual fact, recently that went around the whole thing around being frightened. Because, again, it creates our body, gets that fight or flight, and we want to go. And then I saw this product was Purgine, which happens to be a simpler product, which is really good for those that are battling with constipation.
Yeah, so those groups of drugs, so the sorbitols, lactulose, the PEGs, those work very well. And that's the first line. So if you're thinking of pharmacological therapy, that's the first line.
Senna
would be second line.
Got
so that's
you.
A stimulant for acute cases.
I know, right? Just dropping in these.
Yeah, so Senna, you use it for sort of emergencies, short term, whatever.
Got you.
The osmotic ones, the pergolines, whatever, that is what you want to use first line after diet and lifestyle measures. So that works very well.
Professor, I want to talk. I mean, it's great that we can have this conversation, because I think there's a lot of taboo around subjects like constipation.
True.
And everybody, I mean, we're only human. These are things that we battle with amongst others. I want to ask quickly about, you mentioned about gases that are built up. Now, a lot of people have a lot of gas. You know, I know people that are extremely flatulent. Is there a normalness to have being very flatulent? Is that normal? Some people aren't at all, and some people are very gassy. I fall in the latter category, which again doesn't put me in the very high popular books with friends and family. But I'm pretty convinced, again, dietary, what I'm eating.
Absolutely.
But again, it's also pretty normal.
Listen, flatulence is very normal.
Good.
I mean, as you say, it's a social taboo. We don't talk about it, but it is absolutely perfectly normal.
Yeah, yeah.
clearly diet can actually worsen it. So certain foods, and we know about the broccoli, all of that stuff, cauliflower, they produce gas.
Sure.
And then the non-fermentable fiber.
Got you.
Because it doesn't get digested, so then it then gets metabolized by bacteria, it causes gas. So for sure, it is a normal thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't do it socially because obviously, you know.
well, speak for yourself.
We're trying to keep our friends. But I don't think people should be embarrassed about that.
No,
it's perfectly normal physiology.
Please record this part of the podcast, play it back to your friends and family. Prof, on that note as well, I mean, let's, you know, people spend a lot of time, some of them, especially when they're battling with constipation, sitting on the toilet. And there's that question, is it healthy to be sitting on the toilet, sitting? And I'm talking where you start getting pins and needles, where you've been sitting there for so long. And it's true. This is how people, many people that battle, they haven't been to see anyone yet about constipation. They feel like they got to go, but they're not going.
Yeah.
And they're sitting. When should we go enough? I mean, are we doing any damage to our bodies by sitting for extended periods in the toilet?
That is such an important point. So the evidence is that you should not sit on the toilet for more than 15 minutes.
I love that.
So you shouldn't be sitting there straining and pressing. No. So if those maneuvers that I talked about, you know, putting your feet up on a stool or whatever, don't work. Get up, walk around, have a drink. If that still doesn't work, then please go see somebody because you might have an evacuation problem.
Got you.
And that can be investigated and sorted out. So it's definitely not healthy, you know, to just sit there eternally.
Sure.
Because the pressure, you know, as you strain, the pressure on the pelvic floor muscles is not good over time.
100%.
Yeah, eventually you lose that ability to sense then that there's stool in the rectum and you need to have a motion. So not advised.
That is incredible. Yeah. I want you to dispel one more myth for me before we say goodbye, because this is such an interesting podcast. And while we're here, we may as well talk about it. When I was growing up, if I sat on a wet floor or a cold floor, my mother would always say, you're going to get piles or hemorrhoids for sitting on a cold or damp or wet floor, specifically cold or wet.
Hmm.
And again, because we've got you here and you're a professor and you'd be able to guide us, is that a myth? Is that fact or fiction?
I think I missed that lesson in class.
Yeah, good.
It's the first time I'm hearing.
You've never heard of that? My mother always, if you keep sitting on that cold floor, on your backside, hardcore. The other people I know that are listening to this will go, that I grew up listening to that.
Really?
I was so horrified about sitting on a cold or wet floor because of the fact that I could get hemorrhoids from sitting on a cold floor.
No, I must say, it's the first time I'm hearing this. And if I'm just trying to work it out in my head, I would imagine that you're sitting on a cold floor, the rectal veins would actually constrict.
Yes.
So this is my medical way of thinking
So
I don't know about that. And I'm not dismissing it.
I was hoping you'd be dismissing it. So I could just play this back for my mom to tell her all that me sitting on cold floors that you made me do was wrong.
Listen, our parents have got knowledge that we don't even know about. So I think, you know, anything is possible.
Prof, it was so nice chatting with you because I think that, you know, to be able to have this conversation openly and freely and to be able to help people that are maybe going through this themselves, wondering where they fit on the scale of constipation, whether it's maybe they're borderline chronic, maybe they should go and finally take that step and go and go see their physicians. You know, these are conversations that you're enabling through spending time with us in this podcast. So thanks for your time. And to everyone that's been listening and been thinking to themselves, maybe it's time I go and go see somebody. Yes, maybe. But again, there is a wide variety of lifestyle changes you can make. There's some incredible products that are available to help you. Gut health again comes up very strong in these podcasts. You might have noticed if you've a big fan and you've been listening to these podcasts, the importance of really good gut health. It's taken for granted. I think we so quickly want to fix colds and flus and everything else just because we don't really see the gut. Well, some of us get to see guts, every big guts, but because we don't see what's going on inside our bodies, we don't realize the importance of really good gut health. And I think that taking a great probiotic on a daily basis. I know that Entyro is in the marketplace. I've been using it for the past year and a bit, and I've just felt so much better about everything. My movements are more regular. I'm finding that just my overall well-being due to just changing the simple gut health, how important it is for my overall well-being.
It's so important, not just for gut diseases, right? For cardiovascular disease, neurological diseases.
Oh.
In fact, the gut.
Yes.
Is where everything begins. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a gastroenterologist.
Yeah.
It is so true that the gut microbiome actually predicts for all sorts of diseases in the entire body.
Wow.
And, you know, before you close off, I also want to say that the other reason to really go consult is if you have involuntary weight loss.
Okay.
Okay. If you have anemia.
Right.
If you have blood that you're passing per rectum.
Yes.
Now, it might be piles.
Right.
But the thing about it is that our data shows that even in people who've got piles, if you do a colonoscopy, you might find other things that are causing the blood,
yes,
not just the piles. So
yes,
it is always worth an investigation.
Wow.
And then if you're, the caliber of your stool has changed, so
yes,
it used to be a big stool or whatever, it's now it's ribbon-like or whatever,
yeah, yeah,
that might suggest that there's an obstruction, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, something that people don't talk about.
That point, I see a couple of smiles in the room, but it's so true. It's like we know when we've been to the toilet and it's been a good experience, you know. We know on the ones, and not everybody, not every time, it's a good experience.
And you feel amazing about it,
and
right?
You feel amazing about the good ones, you know. And then sometimes let down by the not so good ones. You're like, well, I was expecting more. But, I mean, isn't it incredible how something like that and how personal that is to us, but how important it is to our overall well-being? Because, you know, a lot of people, and the older you get, you kind of realize, and I'm sure that there are people that are in that age where they, where it's kind of an achievement in the day when they've had
a good one. And you feel lighter, don't you?
Absolutely.
The other thing is, you know, people must look at their stool.
Yes, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
you don't walk away from the loo.
No.
Before you flush, have a look.
Yeah.
You know, is there blood there? Does it look normal,
yes,
etc.? You need to know. You need to have an intimate relationship with your stool.
Spot on. And it does change. I mean, we're not all going to have the same, every day go to the toilet and have the same stool. Sometimes due to dietary changes, the night before, whatever, your stomach might be a little bit upset. It might be have the same texture in terms of how it leaves your body. But that overall consistency is key.
If you're
noticing a change in any of that, go and see somebody.
Yeah. And finally, I know we need to close or something. You know, there are people who have, so they use manual digitation to evacuate a stool.
Yes.
And obviously people are so embarrassed to talk about that.
Yeah.
And doctors don't ask, you know, do you have to use your fingers or whatever?
Well, listen, as a parent, you do to children.
Yeah.
When your kids are battling, how do you get the stool out? You use a finger.
Absolutely. So if you're that person, there's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Yeah.
When you see your GP or doctor, tell them about it, because once again, it may be an evacuatory problem that can be sorted out. And if the doctor doesn't ask, you tell him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love this conversation. I love that you've been able to listen to this and download this. Please share this with your friends. Professor, thank you so much for joining with us today on Health Matters.
It's been refreshing
chatting with you and chatting so frankly, because it's such a subject that it is a subject that can and has caused frustration to many, many people.
And embarrassment.
And you're not alone if this is what you're going through. Go and see a doctor. Prof, thanks for your time.
You're most welcome. Thank you so much.
This has been Health Matters with myself, Ryan O'Connor, in partnership with Cipla. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please remember to rate, review the show. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode.
You've just enjoyed Health Matters with Cipla.